Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films, The 355, The Kindred, The Legend of La Llorona, and The Book of Boba Fett, plus a look back at The League of Gentlemen. I'm also going to be talking about the news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring MacGruber. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Of course, Spider-Man No Way Home is continuing to just dominate. It finished off the New Year's weekend with $56 million, which is really good, and it's like somewhere like in the ninth. I don't know exactly where it is, you know, as numbers are rolling in this weekend as well, but it's somewhere like in the eighth or seventh highest grossing movie of all time. It's probably not going to reach the numbers of, at least domestically, that Avatar has reached, but it's doing extremely well. It's a billion-dollar movie. It's huge, and everybody's all happy about it. Sing 2 is at $20 million from last weekend, which actually isn't bad for its second weekend out there, and I think it goes on VOD very soon, I think within the next week or so, which is typical for the standard 17-day window that Universal had negotiated with theaters way back as they were reopening theaters in the pandemic. Now, this is playing out exactly as I had predicted, that we would get these certain big movies, like the Marvel movies, Spider-Man, Eternals even, Shang-Chi, and Venom, doing extremely well, but then these smaller movies not doing very well at all. Like, you know, after the top two spots from last weekend, nothing cracked $5 million. Which is still very, very low box office for what we have. And as we look ahead towards the Oscars, we're going to get the same narrative that we've always gotten in the past. Why are all the movies that are nominated for Oscars not making much money? Well, part of the reason is some of them, like The Power of the Dog, wasn't meant to make a lot of money in theaters. That just did a qualifying run. The Power of the Dog, most people saw that on Netflix. But even movies like West Side Story is not doing terribly well in the box office. Nightmare Alley is just tanking at the box office. And that's a shame because these are really good movies. The thing you got to remember is people are only going to movies in a certain demographic and for people who really, really want to go to movies. So that's the big thing to remember. Now that leads over into another story, which is about postponements and adjustments due to COVID. Of course, the Omicron surge is out there right around Christmas where everybody was going around to parties and get-togethers and doing all this stuff. And now people are starting to, not quarantining themselves, but we're going back to normal in January. People are going out less. They're having fewer parties. They're having fewer get-togethers. And no big get-together in January outside of New Year's Day, maybe. But if you look at the releases of other movies, aside from Spider-Man, this Christmas has been a pretty dismal box office. And that, I think, has to do with not just COVID, but just the nature of theaters and how people aren't going and clamoring out there to go see something like West Side Story, so because there's no like newness factor to it. And that doesn't mean they shouldn't make these movies. They're good movies, but they do not have the draw that they had. And we're already starting to see some things get curtailed or postponed or changed. The Sundance Film Festival is going to be going virtual participation this year. Golden Globes is doing limited production, and the Critics' Choice Awards, which I'm involved in, they've postponed that at this point. We don't know when it's going to happen because they want the people to be out there to mingle with the celebrities. And already releases like Morbius and John Wick and Legally Blonde 3 have been pushed. Now, some people have said, well, maybe Morbius has been pushed because they are still trying to let Spider-Man trickle out through. I think that's partly an excuse on Sony's, and it's postponed just like 2 months. But the whole thing is we're seeing this again. We're seeing people pushing these movies. And I remember somebody asked me on the radio last week, do you have any resolutions? I go, well, I'm not going to have a resolution. I'm going to say I have a hope. I hope all the movies that are supposed to come out in 2022 actually come out, because that would show a little bit of normalcy. And we don't know how much is going to rebound to a pre-pandemic box office. Again, not because of the pandemic, but because of the availability of technology and the availability of streaming. Now, with that said, I'm involved in the Columbus, Ohio Film Critics Association, which gave out its awards this week. And the big win this year was The Power of the Dog, which won multiple awards, including Best Picture, and Jane Campion for Best Director, and Cody Smit-McGee for Best Supporting Actor, and you got Benedict Cumberbatch as Best Actor of the Year for his other works that he had did throughout the year. At least it wasn't Licorice Pizza. Now, I really did like Power of the Dog. Licorice Pizza didn't win a ton of awards, although it did win three. It was the runner-up for Best Film, which I'm glad it didn't win because I wasn't a huge fan of that. But Alana Haim won for Best Actress and Breakthrough Film Artist, as well as P.T. Anderson winning for Best Original Screenplay. The awards were sort of spread around through other movies and nominees, but it is interesting to note The Mitchells vs. the Machines, my favorite movie of 2021, won for Best Animated Film. And it was a strong year for animation, with Raya and the Last Dragon and Luca and Encanto all in the mix as well. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is coming up on Netflix next week, and that is Archive 81.
We're looking for an artist. Someone who can restore a recently acquired collection of damaged videotapes. There's just one hitch, because the materials are so fragile, they can't be moved. So you'd be doing the work at our remote research facility.
Dan, is everything good? You doing okay?
You said that you've been seeing things up here. Mark. I'm fine. I promise.
What is going on in this building? What kind of game are you playing?
I find it interesting the way Netflix is changing how you release trailers. It used to be they dropped trailers months ahead of time. I remember the Star Wars trailer for The Force Awakens dropped literally a year out. Now, that was a big movie, but you know, something like Archive 81, it's a series going on Netflix. It's a horror series. But that comes out next week. And I've been noticing that with like Netflix. When they got Space Force Season 2 coming up, they don't even have a trailer for that. And that comes out in a month. So I think it's interesting how short the window is that Netflix is playing with their trailers. But coming to Archive 81, this one actually looks really interesting. I think James Wan is involved in it. It's kind of this spin-off of a found footage movie. It's not found footage. It's playing with that as an entry point, and I like that. I'm very curious about this one. This kind of looks pretty good. I just hope they can just sustain it over the course of a season or more, because horror movies are very different than horror series, so we'll see if this one works, but it looks very promising. The next one I want to hit is Pam and Tommy, which is coming to Hulu on February 2nd.
We're so good together, Pam.
To everlasting love!
We have recently come into possession of a piece of material.
This is so private. It's like we're seeing something we're not supposed to be seeing.
Nobody's ever getting rich off a celebrity sex tape.
What if we sold it someplace nobody could find us?
A website.
A what site?
It's this thing on the computer. People will order the tape directly from us.
This is done by the guy who did I, Tonya, and that makes sense because it's a sort of tabloid story from the 90s. I get the sense from the trailer that it's trying to be overly sympathetic to Pamela Anderson. And she was the victim in all this. I'm afraid they're going to paint this as, oh, she's just this innocent victim and this ruined her career. It didn't ruin her career. I think the insane plastic surgery she got, where she went from looking like, you know, just a fresh, young, attractive person to this grotesque plastic doll that is fetishized by some people but looks weird to others. If anything, this thing boosted her career into the 2000s, which it would have gone on the skits. She's not a great actor. Like, we know that. It'll be mildly curious to watch sort of the exploitative stuff happening with tabloid television and tabloid stories from the 90s. But yeah, I'm not blaming her for stuff, but look, this was not the worst thing to happen to her, trust me. And she started out in Playboy too, so it's not like some squeaky clean actress or anything. I don't know. It looks like it might be fun. This might have worked better as a movie rather than a series, but we'll see. We'll check this out in about a month. But that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the 355 and The Kindred. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews and talk about The 355. A diverse group of international women team together to take down a kingpin who has a weapon that could destroy the world.
They can destabilize entire countries from simple reach of their keyboard.
Officially, I can't put you on this. But if you were to go out on your own,
I would need some help.
I'm guessing this isn't a social call.
I'm putting together a team. You're the best in the world at what you do.
Hands! Put your gun down, please. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1! Pull the trigger, or you can listen.
This is one of those movies, we've seen many of these come down the pike for the past couple years, movies that have gotten delayed or pushed back or something like at least a year and a half, almost 2 years ago. This is an action film, it's a spy film, and it's a female-driven spy film. It's specifically done like that, and it's got actually a pretty good cast there. You've got like Jessica Chastain and Diana Kruger and Penelope Cruz and Lupita Nyong'o. The biggest problem that I have with the cast is I'm not a huge Jessica Chastain fan. I think she's probably the most overrated actress in the history of cinema. Is that an exaggeration? I don't know. Maybe it is. There's probably somebody who's more overrated than her, but I just don't buy her as, you know, a thug or a badass kind of character. Cause you know, she tries it constantly. We saw that in Zero Dark 30, and there's a scene in Zero Dark 30 where she like drops the F bomb and it's supposed to be really aggressive and it comes across as stupid. So, I mean, I've seen very few things that I've really thoroughly enjoyed her in, and they always try and make her overly serious. So I'm not a huge fan of hers. Penelope Cruz is fine in this one. And Diana Kruger actually holds her own. She plays a German spy. And what it is there's all these different women from different countries. You know, Jessica Chastain's from America. Lupita Nyong'o's from England. Diane Kruger's from Japan. Penelope Cruz is from Spain. And Bing Bing Van is from China. And they basically come together unexpectedly. They kind of stumble into each other and form this international coalition of rogue spies to take down somebody who has this device. And the device is your typical MacGuffin for a spy film, where, you know, it's this thing that can topple governments and shut down electrical grids and drop planes from the sky and all that kind of stuff. The film itself is a pretty standard spy movie. And there's like things in there that are supposed to be a big twist that are so obvious. And they really try and hide it, but they don't do a good job because these are roaringly huge cliches that have been around for decades. And it doesn't embrace the cliche that, say, like, a James Bond movie does, or at least some of the previous, not the ones right now, because they are trying to be iconoclastic. But, you know, you go back to, like, the Brosnan and before James Bond movies, they kind of embrace the cliches and just had fun with it. This one is trying to be a little bit groundbreaking. It also, it engages in a lot of woman-splaining, you know, to coin the term, which I'm sure other people have said, you know, whereas mansplaining is looking down at somebody, particularly a woman, and explaining stuff to her. I just mansplaining, so just so you know that. And then I just mansplained that I was mansplaining. I'm just going down a rabbit hole here. But I mean, stuff like, and you see this in movies where they're trying to say, oh, well, this would be more impactful to a woman because this is how women think, or this is, oh, women have kids and women are mothers. And it's like, okay, yeah, you know, guys like their families too. It's one of those things where they're trying to at times still make them the badass spy, but at the same time, they're kind of trying to make them like overly sensitive because they want to kind of touch the feminine side. But it's just, I don't know. It gets a little heavy handed with that at times. Like I said, I'm not a huge fan of Jessica Chastain, but you know what? Honestly, I could watch Lupita Nyong'o do anything on film and I would adore her. I think she's fantastic. And the fact that she does not have a bigger career right now is a crime. It really is. I would watch an entire James Bond type series with Lupita Nyong'o at the center of that thing. I mean, she's fantastic. She's the best thing in the movie. Diana Kruger's good, but her character is written very cold, and she's the one has all the trauma that she's keeping behind a lot of, you know, walls. But overall, I mean, it's your run-of-the-mill action movie. It's a spy film. It's about international intrigue and international locations. It's not whimsical. It's meant to be very serious. But, you know, gosh, I have seen a lot worse stuff come out in January. Trust me. This is not a bad little movie. It runs a little bit long. And like I said, it's overly predictable at times. And it does rely on MacGuffins. But in terms of the sort of like that Jane Bond kind of movie that they're trying to make, although it doesn't have as much whimsy as a James Bond movie, it's more like just an international spy, like a Jason Bourne film. You know, it's not bad. It works if that's what you're looking for. It's better than some crappy found footage horror movie, which we used to always get in January. So I'm going to have to say the 355 kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about The Kindred. After surviving a traumatic event, a new mother struggles with regaining her memory and discovering a dark secret in her past.
How long have I been here?
A year?
Since you're the only witness of this suicide, what was your relationship like with your father?
We were close. He said something to me the night. I need to remember if you can tell me anything.
Sometimes these things are best put to rest.
First it was the little things. I thought it was my imagination.
I think no revenants are souls that can't get into heaven. They have targeted you.
This is from England, and it's funny because I think a year or two ago, I reviewed another movie made in England called The Kindred. So this is a pretty popular name of a movie. But in this one, a woman has something traumatic happens to her, and she gets hit by a car, and she's pregnant, and she goes into a coma, and when she wakes up, she has given birth, and her baby's, you know, several months, almost a year old, and her husband's there, and they're trying to make things work. But of course, they had expenses, and, you know, they didn't have an income, and he was taking care of the kid. And we see her at home trying to adjust to taking care of a child that's almost one, as opposed to kind of being there from when they're born because she was in a coma. So it's an interesting mind game to play, especially for somebody who's a parent who knows what it's like to be there from the beginning and then to realize being dropped in there a year down the road is going to be different. The kid doesn't know you. The kid's not bonded with you. And you're trying to do all the stuff that you, there's a process to becoming a parent and taking care of a child that she skips completely. And that's interesting. But then at a certain point, they just kind of hand off the child and they follow this sort of investigation into something sinister and possibly haunted coming after her. It has some neat ideas. The biggest struggle I had with this movie, especially when you watch the trailer looks like it has some very terrifying scenes. Those scenes aren't terribly terrifying. They're kind of bland or mundane scenes. And while the movie has some punch and it has an interesting idea behind it, although kind of like the 355, it's entirely predictable. I mean, you can guess almost everything, you know, within the first 30 minutes, you know how things are going to go. But the big problem is that it deals with that underlit, drab cinematography, so there's nothing interesting to look at, and the dark parts aren't dark enough and stark enough that they just look even more poorly lit. And these are just modern filmmaking techniques that make it harder to watch a movie, at least for me. If those were different, I think it would have popped more as a movie. But, I mean, if you're looking for something to rent, because it's on VOD and in select theaters, like I said, it's not terribly groundbreaking, it's not terribly original, but at least once you get past the bad cinematography, it is effectively done. So I'm going to have to say The Kindred kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the Book of Boba Fett and the Legend of La Llorona. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the reviews and talk about the Book of Boba Fett. Everybody's favorite Star Wars bounty hunter wrestles control of Jabba the Hutt's former turf while we get a glimpse into his past after the events of Return of the Jedi.
I am not a bounty hunter. I've heard otherwise. I know that you sit on the throne of your former employer.
Once captains under Jabba the Hutt.
I'm here to make a proposal that's mutually beneficial. Why speak of conflict when cooperation can make us all rich?
What prevents us all from killing you and taking what we want?
Very much like the Marvel TV series, I love the Star Wars TV series. I think that these are potentially the future of Star Wars. As much as I enjoy the Star Wars movies, and yes, I liked Rise of Skywalker, and I did think The Last Jedi was kind of a dud. But one of the things that defined Star Wars post-80s, and even from the 80s into the 90s, because you got to remember, there were three movies. There was Star Wars, Empire, and Jedi. And for most people, that was all they got from Star Wars. Now, there was plenty of what's called back then the extended universe stuff. There were role-playing games, and there were books that were written, and comic books. Marvel did a whole series of them. And some slipped in and out of canon. And by the 90s, it got very streamlined, and Lucasfilm took control of that, and they did role-playing games and books and comics, and they really enriched the storyline. So that gave Star Wars fans a lot of stuff, you know, big giant sandbox to play around in, until they did the special editions, and then they did the prequels, and then they did these new movies. Let me tell you, 9-year-old Kevin Carr would have lost his mind watching The Book of Boba Fett. This is exactly what I wanted from a Star Wars series. Now, it's getting a little bit of criticism out there because there are people like, oh, it's too pulpy. And I'm like, well, that's kind of what Star Wars was supposed to be. The original Star Wars, the first movie that came out in 1977, was meant to be like a serial. It was meant to be chapter play entertainment, the kind of stuff that you'd see before the movie back in the 40s. And the people who put too much merit to the stories, I think, are foolish, because Star Wars in and of itself has been the churn them out. It's sort of like when you watch these superhero movies and people complain, oh, the superhero movies, they're just about people with superpowers. Yeah, that's kind of the point. And while there's some really interesting stuff explored character-wise and story-wise in the comic books, there were plenty of comic books out there, especially if you go back to the 60s with the, you know, in the 70s with the Stan Lee stuff when it was kind of at its heyday. There was a lot of gee whiz, bubblegum kind of comic books, and because it was made for kids, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. Everything doesn't have to be dark and contemplative, and that's kind of what I like about The Book of Boba Fett. They're enriching his character, and they certainly take their time to write stories and put characters in there that are better than just, you know, farting them out on in a Michael Bay movie or something like that. But these are essentially pulp stories. And, you know, a week-long, hour-long series of Boba Fett is a lot of fun because you get to explore his character. And he's one of the first characters that really started to get explored outside of the canon movies in the Star Wars universe. So I love that concept. And I think you can really enrich the world. And yes, we're going back to Tatooine, but you got to remember that's where Boba Fett was left. He ended up in the Sarlacc pit. And of course, this is somewhat inspired by Patton Oswalt's filibuster speech in Parks and Recreation, but it's telling his story of how he got from the Sarlacc pit and continued his career. You know, he's stuck on Tatooine. Of course, there's going to be a background of Tatooine, but what's wrong with exploring Tatooine? Do we need to have the same characters? Do we have to have the Skywalker descendants keep coming back? Not necessarily, but Boba Fett being there, I think, is very legit. And it's fun. It's action. You know, Robert Rodriguez directed the first episode, and his stuff tends to be, his stuff is either absolute garbage or it's just fun kick butt kind of movies. And that's what this one is. And it really opens it up to playing around with some interesting stories, ideas, and characters, and, you know, seeing either characters you recognize from the past or have heard of, and these background filler that you have, that you don't need a whole movie for, like the Solo movie. That's, I think, one of the problems with that movie, Solo, A Star Wars Story, is that would have made a really interesting series. If they would have made that into a, you know, 6-episode series, I think they could have really done some neat stuff with it, but you expect this brand new movie that takes you new places, and the medium of a series makes it more useful as fleshing things out. You get a little more time, you have a little more leeway, and you don't have to be delivering so many massive big budget special effects every 10 minutes. You can take the time to put people in costumes and just have them have a scene. And that's one of the things that I think is the strength of The Book of Boba Fett. So I think this is going a totally different place than The Mandalorian did. And I, you know, even though they're connected, but I love this. I love this idea. And I'm very much looking forward to every couple weeks having a new Marvel or Star Wars series on Disney Plus. They're doing it right. And that's the thing I'm really looking forward to. So yeah, The Book of Boba Fett, it's on Disney Plus. It drops every Wednesday. They've had 2 episodes out and they're both very, very good. So I'm going to say The Book of Boba Fett totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about The Legend of La Llorona. A family vacationing in Mexico encounter a malevolent spirit in the woods that threatens the life of their young son.
Welcome to Mexico, mi amigos. Are you here for business or pleasure?
We just needed to get away for a while. Who's that?
The man who built this house.
Danny!
Danny! La Llorona!
What's a Llorona and what does it want with my son?
Mama!
What?
But who?
She's coming.
I don't want her to take me.
This one stars Autumn Reeser, who's an actress. She's in her 40s now. She was kind of big in the earlier in the 2000s. I think she was on something like The OC or something like that. She's played several things before. Very pretty, but you know, now she's in her 40s, so she's no longer playing the 20-some ingenue. She's trying to make a transition, the actress herself, because she comes on, and I think she's an executive producer on this thing. And I think it's great that she's picking a role that gives her something different than what she's done earlier in her career. And of course, Danny Trejo's in this as well. He's pretty much got him. I think he's contractually obligated to at least have given offer to turn down, for any movie that takes place in Mexico, around Mexico, in the Southwest, or as anyway has a scary looking Mexican dude in it. But yeah, Dee has a lot of fun. Now it's based on the legend, the story of La Llorona, who is a woman who, depending on what story and version you hear, she allegedly drowned her children in a lake or a stream and then haunts the countryside crying. That's what La Llorona means. It's the weeping woman. And she will appear and take children and potentially, you know, who knows, they either disappear or they drown or something like that. There's versions of this. You know, it's sort of this folk tale, this legend of, you know, it's another one of those boogeyman type stories. Now, they did the movie La Llorona, which was part of the Conjuring universe, and so there was a big movie based on this. This is a much smaller movie based on the same legend. And it's in theaters, limited, and I think it's coming on the 11th, which is, what, Tuesday, I think? It's coming to DVD and Blu-ray, so there's a very, very short theatrical window. It's not a great movie. It is very low rent. You can tell they rented this villa where they shot a good chunk of it, and they have stuff in the back, and they, you know, they could go into the woods and shoot stuff. So it's a relatively small cast, very limited sets. You know, it's a small production. You know, they don't have a lot of money behind this. But if you like that very, very independent stuff that at least is done on a professional level, I mean, it doesn't look like it's shot by somebody in their basement. But, you know, it's not the highest grade of a horror film that you're going to see. Some of the effects are overdone and underdone, and the writing's not great. But you kind of get that with these smaller horror releases that show up. So if you're a fan, you want to see something a little bit different, and you're waiting for something like The Black Phone to come out, you know, you can watch this. I'm going to give it a little bit of a kind of sucks, because it does fall into a lot of traps, and some of the acting can at times be pretty dreadful. But still, you know, it might be worth a watch if you're interested in this kind of level of a filmmaking. But yeah, so The Legend of La Llorona kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be taking a look back at The League of Gentlemen and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring MacGruber. Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with reviews, and I'm going to do something a little bit different, because everything was thrown off in terms of film reviews in the pandemic. Once the pandemic started and they shut down theaters for like 6 months, we had, as film critics and people who talked about this stuff, we had to find something to talk about. And during this time, streaming was already showing up. You know, there's several streaming services that had already gotten started, like Disney Plus and Paramount Plus with CBS All Access, and of course Netflix and Amazon Prime and Hulu all existed. But things have, over the last 2 years, have really developed in terms of streaming, and developed in terms of diversifying the watchable marketplace. There's a lot of stuff out there, and I do not want to just focus on theatrical releases sometimes because, you know, things change and things shift. And there's a lot of people out there not watching movies, or at least not going to the movies to watch them. And I've been doing over the last year or two, really focusing on trying to beef up the streaming I do. It could be something that has dropped recently, or it's sometimes stuff that is just what I've been watching. Talking about just new releases on this weekend can get a little boring. Let's delve into the past and look at some of the stuff that I'm digging up. And one of the things I wanted to talk about today is one of those, I guess you could call it a gem from the past. The series, it's a TV series called The League of Gentlemen. This turn of the century BBC sketch comedy show features the disturbing town of Royston Vasey and its even more disturbing inhabitants.
Welcome to the League of Gentlemen.
I've only been on the hormones 18 months.
You ready, Ken?
Yeah.
We're all here behind you.
You're out. Oh.
Winners of the Perrier Comedy Award.
You'll have your own shower and WC.
Into which we don't pass solid.
Coming to a town near you.
He's looking for a boy.
Farewell. There goes the neighbourhood. The League of Gentlemen. Tomorrow at 9:30 on BBC Two. What?
This is nothing to do with The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, which was a sci-fi horror slash fantasy. I think it was originally a graphic novel or series, and then it was turned into a movie about 20 years ago. This has nothing to do with that. The League of Gentlemen, it started out as sketch comedy from a group of guys in Britain. Rhys Shearsmith and Steve Pemberton are sort of like the minds behind it. Mick Gatiss, who you've seen in stuff from like Doctor Who, and he was in Sherlock. He played Mycroft in the Sherlock series with Benedict Cumberbatch. He's also involved in it, and there's another guy who does just the behind-the-scenes stuff. But it's kind of like Monty Python, where they're these guys, and they oftentimes do a lot of the parts and drags. They play multiple characters and they'll put on different makeup and stuff. And it's also, you know, it takes place, it started in like 1999. And these guys are much, much younger. They're much older now. And like Steve Pemberton and Rhys Shearsmith have gone on to do other series like Psychoville, which was on the BBC, as well as Inside Number 9, which is currently playing on the BBC, and that's actually quite a good thing. Now, all these things are available through BritBox. If you have Amazon Prime, you can sign up for BritBox. It's an add-on for like $5 or $6 a month, and you get access to all this British programming. This is a disturbing show, so you have to have a dark sense of humor to like it. Fortunately, I have a very dark sense of humor. And the series focuses on some really weird people. Like, one of the characters, one of the best characters in there, is a vet who is terrible and ends up killing all of his patients. And it's in bad taste, but the entire show's in bad taste, and it's offensive and it's crass and it's dark and it's twisted, but it's very, very funny. Now, because it's all those things and it was made over 20 years ago, or at least started to be made over 20 years ago, there's a lot of politically incorrect humor in there. There's, in fact, one character called Papa Lazaru, which is a guy in blackface. And they still have this on the BritBox section. There's been a lot of those series like, you know, Little Britain and even an episode of The Office where there was blackface stuff that they have removed. You know, and I understand it's offensive and all, but I think that there's sometimes people go a little bit too far. You know, like, for example, the famous scene in Holiday Inn where Bing Crosby does a blackface routine. I don't think you should edit that out. I think you need to say, this is what cinema was back then, and it was inappropriate, and we're not trying to normalize it today, but, you know, I think pretending like it doesn't exist doesn't help anybody. But The League of Gentlemen, it is disturbing. It's the characters are all twisted, and they're like this very bizarre, like there's these two people, this married couple that own a shop outside of town. They're not really local, but they only go to local people, and they're potentially pretty much serial killers who will kill and get rid of anybody who is not a local person. Which, when you have a shop on the outskirts of town, you're going to get people who are not local. So that, I mean, that tends to happen. And you know, there's other characters in there. I mean, there's an entire rogue gallery. So if you like British humor, and in particular, if you like inappropriate stuff, like the stuff that Matt Lucas does, more inappropriate than that. It's very funny, but it is dark, and it's worth watching. I had a blast watching it because I think there were 3 or 4 seasons of it, and then they did a movie in 2005. It's absolutely worth checking out. The League of Gentlemen on BritBox on Amazon. It's worth seeing. It totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on MacGruber, a series that has recently dropped on streaming. This is on Peacock, and it dropped right before Christmas, and it's very Christmas-related because it takes place at Christmas, sort of like how Hawkeye took place at Christmas. Taking place after the self-titled action flick from about 10 years ago, warrior/spy/hero/throat-ripper MacGruber is released from prison to take down an international arms dealer.
We need you, MacGruber.
Why me?
You were specifically requested. Mac, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It's a suicide mission.
Who let the dog out?
My country has invited me to die for it, and I RSVP'd yes, queen.
Uncle Sam tells you to jump, and you go get your jumping shoes.
Classic MacGruber.
This isn't just any mission for me.
This is personal. He murdered my mother.
You're going to get us all killed.
If you recall, about 10 years ago, there was that movie MacGruber that came out. It stars Will Forte based on the character he played on Saturday Night Live. And if you remember, the genesis of that character was MacGruber was the scene-chewing hero based on MacGyver. Only instead of Richard Dean Anderson's MacGyver, where he would use these like a paperclip and a gum wrapper to save the world from nuclear destruction. In the MacGruber sketch on Saturday Night Live, he'd always come in there and he'd never disarm the bomb and it would end up blowing up anyways. So they made a movie based on it, like I said, 10 some years ago, that basically sent up action films from the 80s and 90s, in particular the 80s. So the stuff you'd see with Chuck Norris or Sylvester Stallone, or I mean, even like Arnold Schwarzenegger was too classy for the grittiness of these action movies that you saw. I mean, the stuff that was Canon Films was famous for making these kind of things. And that's what MacGruber's based on, although it kind of takes its look and the flavor from the MacGyver series, but it's also very dark and crass, and it's very R-rated. And the movie itself, I thought the movie was a hoot. I loved it. It was one of my favorite movies of the year. It made about $10 million. Nobody saw it. But it has a very huge cult following, and I like to think I maybe had something small to do with that as well, because I can say nothing bad about that movie. It is a hoot. Very inappropriate, but a lot of fun. They basically continued the story, and they made, I think it's like 8 episodes, and they're all on Peacock right now, but you got to have the Peacock paying service. So you got to pay it's $5 a month for the ads version. I think if you pay $10 a month, you don't have ads, but it's whatever you want to pay. And it's R-rated. It's very funny. It's retreading some of the jokes from the original movie. And it does bring back some of the people. You got Kristen Wiig in there playing his love interest. You got Ryan Phillippe playing one of the characters because he was in the original movie. And you got some new people like Lawrence Fishburne is a general in this. And you've got Billy Zane playing the bad guy. It is very much in line with the characters and humor and inappropriateness of the original movie. It is cut from the exact same cloth. So it doesn't feel like there was much of a change at all. You could watch the movie and then go right into the show, and it feels like it's the same production. And that's just a joy to see, especially for something that's a cult movie. Sometimes when you bring something back, it loses something. MacGruber loses nothing in the time that it's spent collecting dust. So yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's like The League of Gentlemen, very inappropriate, very crass. But if you have the right sense of humor, MacGruber totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
New DVDs and Blu-rays available this week include Antlers, The Djinn, Together, and Black Friday. And that's it. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Scream and Hotel Transylvania Transformania. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.